Well, hello, everybody, and welcome. You have tuned in to episode number 396 of Linux in the Ham Shack, the most terrific amateur radio podcast on the internet. And tonight we have our deep dive episode, and our deep dive is going to be an interview about a new project that's coming along that involves hardware and software in the amateur radio world, involves an audio codec that we've talked about in previous episodes, and we're going to learn all about M17 soon. But first, let's go ahead and introduce the cast of the show, which is myself, Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD.
And if it wasn't already apparent that we're two bottles of wine in, let's just roll with it. So let's interview just wants to come out. so let's go ahead and do it. Tonight we're interviewing a member of the M17 project, and we're going to find out what part he plays in that project here pretty soon. But this is Steve Miller, Kilo, Charlie 1, Alpha, Whiskey, Victor. Wow, got that out without stumbling. Cool. And he's actually from really close to where I grew up, so that's cool. And he's probably sitting in Newmarket right now?
Yeah, that's correct.
All right. Newmarket, New Hampshire, a place that I used to frequent quite a bit. So anyway, Steve, good evening. Thanks for being here.
Hey, good evening. And, you know, I think it's all that anticipation of having me on the show that the word interview is stuck in my head. Well, good evening, and thank you for having me.
Yes, well, thanks for being here. And no, it's more likely just because I'm sort of half in the bag. But we'll start by letting you tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe before you got into amateur radio or technology or things like that, like how you got into all of this. And then we'll move into the M17 project, or at least what you know of its origins. So tell us what you want to tell us about how you got into ham radio and technology.
Okay, sure. Let's see. I mean, it's going to be a long story. I'll try and keep it short. And the dog just got out. So if you hear some noise in the background, the puppy wants to join me. No, I'm Steve Miller. I'm an amateur radio operator since 2013. I was licensed as a technician back then, upgraded to general in 2016, and I'm also studying for my extra, which I hope to get before the year is out, so that'll be exciting. I got into amateur radio namely because my brother, N1ZXZ, got into amateur radio. He got into it a long time before I did, but I always found the things that he was getting into and the projects that he was working on so interesting and really, you know, the type of thing that I wanted to get involved in. So I did a little bit more research and, you know, got into the public service aspect of everything. So I'm a member of Aries up in the area. And, you know, it's an amazing hobby to have. Expensive at times, but, you know, kind of goes with the, the flow. But, you know, with the M17 project coming up, you know, we should have an answer for something, you know, as far as hardware and software related, make it a little bit more affordable for people coming in. But yeah, that's a general short story of me.
All right. So how did your, you know, little background there of amateur radio and technology, I'm not sure we heard a lot about the technology part, but how did that lead you to M17? How did you fall in with this cast of crazy characters doing this project?
Well, as far as technology is concerned, I guess I should probably, preface this with, I started out as a systems admin for a local, nonprofit in Boston, back in 2008. So, you know, I've, had IT career. So, you know, I got involved with a whole bunch of electronics projects and, you know, taking servers apart and putting them back together and, you know, having fun with that. And, I was just idling on IRC chat with the Reddit net group one day, and this guy comes in from Poland, says, "Hey, I'm working on this new project, and I want to know if there's anybody that's interested in helping me out." And I made my way over to, you know, his neck of the woods and IRC land, learned as much as I could about the whole system, and started to volunteer my services as as far as I could, you know, with being a systems admin, I started taking over the whole systems administration part of M17. That's where I fit in. I'm the web administrator, the email administrator, the person that takes care of all the the social media accounts, and I brought the forums up, and so basically anything that you see on the web, I had a hand in, and that's where I fit in. But with the project taking off so well, it's given me the impetus to learn more. So I'm designing boards and testing things out that are in experimental or prototype status right now. And I'm also watching people that are much, much smarter than I am just take this project and run with it, and everybody's having a lot of fun. So it's fed the need for not just having something to do in the hobby, but also the need to learn, or the desire to learn something new. So it's really, really cool.
Oh, that's very cool. And they've also shouldered you with being the voice of the project, because apparently all the people whose time of day it is okay to be the voice, they don't want to be, and everybody else is over in the Eastern Europe, and it's kind of like really late right now. So I guess they stuck it with you.
Yeah, and I don't think it's that nobody wants to really be the voice. It's just that there's people that are highly focused on specific tasks with the project. And since I'm the one that, I'm not really developing anything, I'm not really designing anything specifically, I have the opportunity to kind of sit back and watch everything that's going on. So I guess I'm the one that has the voice, because I've been able to watch everything for so long.
Right, so you're like the generalist who's got a little bit of a finger in everything that's happening, which is great. That's exactly what we need when we talk about the project. And as we have already mentioned, the project is the MIC-17 or M17 project. And we should probably start off, since our deep dive is actually on the project, and now that we know who we're talking to, you should tell us what you can about the origin of the project and what the project actually is from your point of view.
Oh, goodness. The origin of the project, that would be a question for Wojciech. And
your phone's handy, right? You can give him a call.
Give him a call. Yeah, let me call him.
Swag him up.
it's born out of the need for having hardware and software that is not encumbered by patents or copyright or any sort of licensing that is not open. Wojciech had seen that need in the amateur community to have something that people can experiment with, available to them as far as digital voice is concerned. And that's really, from what I understand, that's how it really came about. I started getting involved in October 2019. So it's been over a year, I'd say about 18 months now at least. That's how it started. And, we kind of have a tagline of, trying to take DMR and Fusion and D-Star off the air, but that's not really that's more tongue in cheek than it is, an actual, motto. We want to, replace it with, not really replace it, because here I go, talking negative about them. I don't want to talk negative about any of those other modes. But we want to have something that's, truly, from ground up, open and open source and free for the amateur to really experiment with.
So what do you see as the entirety of the M17 project? What does it encompass? I mean, obviously it's going to be a platform where you can have a radio running M17 and communicate using it, but what are the parts of it that are going to make up the whole?
It's really my... my vision of the way that M17 wants to go is that it's first a protocol. Really, the protocol really defines the whole project. And just like DMR or Fusion or DSTAR, those were all protocols. So that M17 started as a protocol. There's also a hardware side of it, the TR9 handheld radio that's it's kind of put on hiatus right now. We will look at it in the future, but there's a hardware aspect of it, and then there's also the networking aspect of it, which is really my forte. Getting that networking stuff going to interlink all these repeaters that could be built, and all these reflectors. If you're familiar with the way that DSTAR does its traffic over the internet, we have a similar system. So it's really from the ground up, it's going to encompass software and hardware as well as networking. I guess networking kind of falls under software, but kind of give you the whole kit and caboodle, I suppose.
All right, that sounds really interesting, and I'm looking forward to it. I've already sort of delved into M17 a little bit. We're going to talk a little about how that happened in a bit, my participation with actually having a reflector and stuff, but we'll get to that. That's sort of further in. But before we go too much further, we usually leave this to the end, and I hate doing that, but do you want to tell us who are the lead developers on the thing? Tell us who the team is?
Yeah, sure. This is going to switch tabs. And if I remember correctly...
I love your music, by the way.
My music? Oh, come on. I knew it was going to come up, yeah. the team, it all started with Wojciech over there in Poland, SP5WWP. He's the lead for the whole group, and he on the page, he has it described as a bare metal software developer. He was licensed back in 2016, the same time that I got my general. Then there's me, Steve Miller, yes. And, we have W2FBI, Mike, down there in Massachusetts. He does a lot of testing and development for us as well. Those are the I don't want to say the top three, because we're all kind of on the same, playing, the same level, N7TAE, Tom, he's over there, I believe in Arizona. He actually developed the MRefD software, which is the actual reflector, the M17 reflector. And, he really gave me, the kick in the pants to start getting things going with the whole project. I believe a little while ago you had 88DP, Doug. He's the developer for DudeStar and DroidStar. He had an existing product that allowed you to get onto different digital voice modes through the internet on your computer or on your mobile device. And so he brings a lot of experience with that to the table. We have WX90 Rob of the MobileLinked fame. He developed the MobileLinked TNC. It's so difficult to say that. I got to tell him to try and change that name, because it's got that D at the end. It sounds kind of funny. At least for me, it does. He developed the TNC1, TNC2, TNC3. The latest iteration, the TNC3, is actually compatible with M17. You can turn your TNC into an M17 capable device, plug it into a radio that's capable of doing the type of modulation that we're using, and get on the air with M17, which is really cool. I do a lot of experimentation with his stuff lately. We have OH1CAU. Giovanni over in Finland. He does a lot of writing for the specification. He did a whole lot of stuff early on. He's taking a hiatus, I believe, for now, but we should have him back soon. And we also have KM6VMZ Elms over in California. He does software development, so when it comes to creating the software for the TR9, or anything else that we put out as far as hardware is concerned, I'm sure that we'll start seeing stuff from him as well.
Oh, very good. That's a nice outline of the team. We usually forget to ask and find out later that there's so many people involved in projects, and then they don't get mentioned. But that's cool. I think that's a good rundown. So Now that we know that, let's talk a little bit about M17 itself. So I'm interested in, since you've talked about open from the very beginning, so what languages does it use to, usually there's more than one, maybe a core language and then a couple of things, maybe some shims written and other stuff. And how exactly is M17 licensed?
It's written in English. I wish. But no, we can say that because the specification is written in English. But the TR9, the software for that, was written in C. We have implementations in both Python and C. I'm working on a Golang implementation as well. It's also forced me to learn Python a little bit more. I'm learning more Python serial, which is a whole beast in itself. And the licensing, it's all GPL 2.0. So we try to keep it as free and open as possible. We also open it up for commercial use. So the reason being is that, if some commercial manufacturer out there wants to, pick it up and start using it, maybe it'll give us the hardware that we could be looking for, rather than just designing ourselves. We can leverage, say Motorola to give us a hand with that. Actually,
why did you go with Motorola? Why didn't you go with Flex?
Actually, it's funny you mentioned Flex, because I want to grab a Flex radio and I want to see if I can put M17 on it. However, I don't think Flex makes a radio that's 10 meters and above. So that's the thing about M17, is that we can't use it on HF. So
okay, yeah. So this is a good point to ask why.
Well, it's because of the symbol rate. The symbol rate, that we're using is, I have to remember this off the top of my head. I think it's 4800. So it's a little bit too fast for, being on HF. Uses a pretty wide bandwidth as far as most digital, protocols are concerned. It's not as wide as, say, DMR with 12.5 kilohertz, but it's around 9 kilohertz wide. So it's still too wide to be put onto, things like HF and not break any of our rules in the U.S. But, the symbol rate is a lot higher than what you would typically see as far as, things that you would have on HF.
All right. Very good. So I sort of know, at least I think, I hope I know the answer to the next couple of questions. So I'm just going to roll them into one. You mentioned that the whole project is kind of being built up from the ground up, but I think there's some other audio technology that you're leveraging, and I was just wondering, like, what other projects are you using to either model your software on or borrowing code from to make M17 a reality?
Yeah, that's a really great question, and it does seem to be overlooked by a lot of people that are just starting to learn about M17. When it comes to the voice side of everything, we're using Codec 2, which was developed by Dave Rowe down in Australia. I want to say that he's down in Australia.
Yes, he is. He's been on the show. So
excellent. Oh, perfect. He developed Codec 2 to be a low bitrate audio codec that can be used on RF. I mean, he has modes that go all the way down to like 700, so that's good for use on HF, and he has it going all the way up to 2400, which is what we're using. We're on M17, we're using 2400, and then we also have a half rate as well that we can combine both voice and data at the same time. The data, or at least, I'm sorry, the on-air protocol that we kind of started modeling after was NXDN, namely because of, we needed a place to start, and we wanted to go ahead and kind of, tweak it a little bit, make it a little bit more available to us as an air interface. Yeah, we do kind of leverage the NXDN protocol a little bit for the air interface, and that's really the two major projects that we, well, I guess Yeah, no, that's pretty much the two major projects that we kind of leverage inside M17. And we have to make sure that the licensing matches up and everything. And that's why we chose Codec 2, because of the free and open nature of that license. So we were able to include it as a voice codec into M17. I mean, there's a lot of other projects that are leveraging us. So, like I mentioned before, you know, DudeStar, DroidStar, computer side of it, you know, getting onto M17 and playing around with it. And then there's the TNC3, the OpenRTX folks, they're, you know, using M17 to kind of hack around with the MD380 radios, you know, the ones that were, I forgot who originally sold them, but I think they're being sold by TYT now. Yeah, OpenRTX is developing a new firmware, and they're really driving M17 to be included into that firmware so that you could turn that DMR radio into something better. You know, so there's a bunch of projects that are actually, you know, integrating with us instead of the other way around. So, you know, we only use a couple of things in order to make M17 happen, but there's many other projects that are out there that are using us to make what they're doing happen.
I just wanted to touch on the baud rate, the 4,800 bits per second that you're using. Is that for, like, audio quality? Is that the idea behind that?
Yeah, that's namely just so that we can get that, I want to say, better sound. I don't think I'm far from the truth when it comes to it. But, yeah, when you start talking about getting higher fidelity audio, if you talk to anybody when it comes to telephone systems, you know, if you're talking about SIP or IAX or anything like that, you know, the more fidelity that you want over the line, the higher the rate has to be. There's a trade-off. You know, where do you draw that line where it's high enough fidelity but a low enough bit rate that we can actually squeeze it into, you know, a nice bit narrow bandwidth of frequency that we have available. So, you know, or at least as far as the rules are concerned, you know, I mean, we could go ahead and squeeze it into spread spectrum or whatever and have the highest fidelity out there as far as the radio is concerned. But, yeah, the bit rate is higher so that we can get a better sounding audio over the radio.
Very, very good. So let's talk a little bit about practicality of the project. So, I mean, obviously the project is new. It's not completely developed and there is a lot of development to be done, but that's not to say that M17 can't be used like today if you want to use it. Now, we mentioned DudeStar, so, and OpenRTX and stuff like that. And we are looking, I've already lined up an interview with OpenRTX. So we're looking forward to that. So tell us, if you haven't already completely enumerated, maybe just put it all together in a list. If somebody wanted to use M17 right now to see how cool this new protocol is, how does one do that? What availability is there?
Well, let's see. The easiest way that I see right now is, actually, I also want to make mention of MVoice, which is the Linux client for M17. To get onto the reflectors. That was developed by Tom and 70AE as well. The easiest way for, you know, the fans of the show, I'm assuming that they're all running Linux. Go ahead, download MVoice or download DudeStar and get that onto your computer. Once it's installed, you can go ahead and select M17 as the protocol in DudeStar, or MVoice will automatically have a list of all the reflectors that you can use. Select a reflector and have at it. You know, it's as simple as that. You know, if you know how to set up Mumble or set up Discord, you know, you can go ahead and set up one of those two clients. That'll get you onto M17, but it won't necessarily get you onto the air. We don't have a way to put a repeater or a radio onto. I don't want to say that we don't have a way to do it. It's just that the software isn't ready yet to get you onto the air from the computer. There's no handheld that's available. There's no mobile rig that's available to get you onto the air with M17 by itself. So if you're a little bit more inclined to do some experimentation, you can go ahead and get yourself a Nucleo TNC or a TNC3, which are both developed by WX9O, and download the experimental firmware onto either of those devices, plug it into a 9600 baud capable radio, and then you're on the air with M17. Depending on how many people are around you, you may be the only one. So, this is really highly experimental stuff right now. So if you set up a radio, you may be only talking to yourself. Those are the two major ways to really get onto the air and playing with M17 right now. We've been having a lot of fun, or at least I've been having a lot of fun, plugging in, my Nucleo TNC into a Kenwood radio, getting out onto the air. I've been able to do APRS over M17. It's still AX25, except instead of using, AFSK packet, you're using M17. So the packet's actually a lot quicker. I think they only last about a half a second, so you got to have some really fast radios. So I've been having a lot of fun with APRS, using the packet mode of M17. And you can, I've also played around with M17 voice. Pumped into a RTL SDR, and just kind of transmitting from different areas around the seacoast area, and seeing what kind of propagation I'm getting, and how well it decodes, actually traveling through the ether, as it were. So download a client or experiment with a radio. Those are the two ways to really get involved with M17 at home.
All right, very good. We'll talk a little bit about MRFD in a bit, but we don't want to dive into that because that's a different project, even though it's M17 related. But so what's the development roadmap right now? Like, what are you guys working on first, and then what's going to come later? What's the big thing that needs to get done now to sort of make this thing move forward?
Yeah, that's funny that you asked that, because not too long ago we actually did have a conversation about that. And we all agreed that the focus should be getting M17 on the air. We've got the network side of it done to a point. It works. We don't have to really focus on hardware, because we can leverage existing hardware right now. And that's really what we're focusing on, is leveraging existing hardware to get us on the air. So really all of our development focus is involved with that. We've got, as you said, the Open RTX guys. We're trying to get M17 shoehorned into a DMR radio. It is still at 4FSK, so it should work. Fingers crossed. I've used my Kenwood radios to go ahead and put M17 on the air, and actually just recently, within the past few days, Wojciech was able to get a Motorola GM300 to transmit and receive M17. Granted, M17 is being modulated and demodulated on a Raspberry Pi on the side, but it still works. You can still use the microphone with the radio, you can get M17 to go through that GM300. So really, we're focusing on getting the air interface and M17 itself on the air, so that we can get that stuff really perfected. And then once that is done, then we can go ahead and start focusing on the hardware again, doing things like creating repeaters, creating handheld radios, maybe even a mobile at some point. So we kind of want to look at the RF first, and then tangible things next.
Very good. Do you see this coming to a point where, like, eventually you could do stuff? Because, like, I know we have one guy who listens to our show who's connecting his Yaesu repeater to All-Star and stuff like that. So do you see this being, like, an M17 being a way to communicate through Pi-Star once there's some hardware available, or maybe, like, retrofitting a repeater to use M17 natively, stuff like that? Is that, like, all on the radar?
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, G4KLX, Jonathan Naylor, of the MMDVM fame, he's on our radar, or we're on his radar, rather. He has been developing MMDVM to also support M17. We're just waiting for hardware that we can actually use that's reliable and is a solid testing platform. MMDVM will support M17. And yes, you will eventually see it in PyStar as long as Andy's, accepts us as a valid protocol. I'm sorry, I kind of trailed off there for a second. Was there another part of that question?
Well, I was just wondering if you see like a future being able to retrofit M17, maybe some hardware like an add-on TNC or a dongle or something where you could have a Yaesu or a Motorola or a Peter or something like that being able to do M17 natively.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I thank you for refreshing my memory. So if you look at like, Jonathan Naylor actually pointed this out. If you look at say the Brandmeister Wiki, where it lists all the hardware that can be retrofitted to work with DMR, anything that's listed in there will also do M17. So really, you can just take a look at a list of anything that you can retrofit DMR into. You can go ahead and put M17 in there. So yeah, eventually, you would be able to take an MMDVM modem, stick it on a Pi, put it on a repeater, and there you go. You're good to go. So it is something that we are focusing on, and that's part of what we're doing in order to get the air interface perfected. Because we're using the MMDVM modems, we're also using a bolt-on TNC in order to get onto the air. So it's there, it's just not polished. It's very, very rough right now.
Well, that's okay. It's a young project, and it'll get more polished with time, which is fine. And I do want to talk a little bit about MRFD, but before I do that, I'm going to let people stop listening to me for a little while, and I'm going to let Bill pick it up so he can ask you some questions, and you can hear somebody else's modulation for a little while.
I'm confused. What are you talking about? This is all digital radio stuff. I'm so confused.
You know all there is to know.
I know enough. I know how to start DudeStar. That's all I do. And I have got on M17 once, so I know it works. So let's see here. Jeez, Russ, you threw me under the bus here.
I know. I wanted to let everybody know that you were drinking heavily and you weren't going to be a part of this.
Yeah, I'm sitting here enjoying my cigar and listening to a great podcast.
Sometimes you have to participate in your own podcast,
hang my hat on the door, right? I'm here, yeah. Me and Cheryl just sitting here liking stuff on Facebook. Right, Cheryl? Are you there?
She's there. She probably would have picked it up better than you. Come on.
Yeah. No, I just want to comment that the documentation for everything, the protocol and the detailed documentation of all the physical data link layer and application layers is really, really, really well done. I mean, I'm just still just going through it as we speak, and it's documented very well for a open source project, and kudos to you guys.
Did you mention a documenter, or is it being done by the team?
First of all, it is open source. Anybody can go ahead and view the documentation, but also it's on GitHub. So if anybody has anything that they want to add, or if they notice something that's an error, they can change it. All they have to do is just submit a pull request. It's then reviewed by either me or Wojciech or Juhani, or even, if somebody else can, say, yes, this is a good change that needs to be made. Let's go ahead and implement it. It's a full team effort. So, and it's also, again, we're leveraging the community to kind of make it better. And I really appreciate the kind words about the documentation. It is something that we're working heavily on, along with the hardware and actual physical implementation of everything. But protocol is nothing without its specification. And it's difficult for me to kind of read that documentation and understand it fully. So having somebody else outside, take a look at it and say, you guys are doing a good job. I really appreciate that. Thank you very much.
So yeah, I did my part. This is all really good. Even the diagrams and stuff like that, understanding how the payload is built and stuff like that. Yeah, that's really gory details for a lot of users. But I mean, and the point, this is not an end user documentation. This is really for people wanting to implement the protocol.
Correct.
And yeah, it definitely gives them, you know, a plethora of information of exactly, you know, how the how the sausage is made.
Yeah, and it was really cool to see, WX9O give us the packet side of everything, because he developed firmware for his TNC in order for M17 to work on it, and he gave us a lot of stuff in there for that side of it too. So there's this, like I said, there's all the authors are listed in the document. So if you just take a look at it, you'll see that there's not just one or two people working on it. It's a whole group of people.
Yeah. And I mean, I think you've touched on this already. I was just looking at one of the bullet points here, about whether M17 is really meant for coexistence or supplanting existing technology. And I think you've kind of covered the fact that this is just, yet another thing that could possibly grow into, possibly some vendor adoption and stuff like that, and would definitely sit very well with people concerned about, the closed licensing of certain chips and stuff like that within the radios and the other technologies that tend to be a little bit of an encumbrance for getting that out to mass market and adoption for vendor usage.
Yeah, and that's one of the major selling points as far as M17 is concerned, is that the open and free nature of it. We don't intend on locking it down for any reason. We believe that an effort is only as good as the people that are working on it. Now, granted, of course, you have large organizations out there that can go ahead and just kind of throw money and resources at developing something. But again, that's their IP. That's their stuff that they're looking to sell. We're not really looking to sell this protocol. We're not looking to sell a codec. We're not looking to sell anything as far as, the protocol is concerned itself. So we try to keep it nice and open. And, when it comes down to things of a closed source nature, there are concerns. Yes, there are concerns with, is this license, what am I being bound to with this license? Because really, when you buy something that has a closed source codec in it, you're not necessarily, buying the rights to use it. You're buying a license for it. And, I remember, a South Park episode about, licensing, and I believe it was kind of like taking a stab at Apple, but basically, you don't know what you're signing unless you read every fine little point in that license and agreement. So, we try to keep that, out of the picture. We want to make sure that everything is open, everything is free. Anybody can go ahead and start using it. Anybody can change it. Anybody can experiment with it. And, I'm hoping that will bring more people into seeing that M17 is a bit more amateur focused because of the free nature of the whole system. And, building it from the ground up, I kind of want to touch on this. Building it up from the ground up is what I see is bringing amateur radio back to its roots, back to developing stuff and experimenting and everything like that. You can't do that with a closed source license or a closed source codec or anything like that. So, these other protocols that are out there, DMR, DSTAR, all that other stuff, sure, they may be free to implement, but the codecs are not, and that's really the encumbrance. That's what really gets people, is that they can play around with it, but they have to pay for the right to actually use it.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about the commercialization aspect. So you're not looking at commercializing the M17 project.
As far as the protocol is concerned, no, I don't think that there's any intention on making this as a a product to be sold. Really, it's as corny as it sounds, it's for the better the benefit of humanity, really. Whether it be through you know, a low cost alternative to other things that are available, or even just, you know, the ability to sit there and hack at something, just for the fun of it. So, I don't think that there'll be any, the GPL2, license, you know, that kind of, you know, states the whole idea behind, what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah. And I see you have, a larger sponsor of the Open Research Institute. So how are they helping your project?
Yeah, so they're actually helping us with getting things like grants and funding these projects, because right now the whole team, it's all out of our own pockets and our own time, which really severely limits the amount of development that we can do. I mean, not necessarily in the amount of, stuff that we can acquire and play around with, because eventually, over a long period of time, yeah, eventually we will get all the tools and resources that we need in order to do this. But in order for it to actually become productive, we need a little bit of a push to get that stuff that we need. And ORI saw us as, in line with their ideals and their project goals and what they intend on doing. So they have wonderfully sponsored us in the further development of M17.
And I see you also have a donate now link too, so people can help support you individually if they're interested in helping this project grow and flourish.
Yep, that's correct. Anybody that feels that they could, if they don't feel that they can contribute, as far as technical ability or anything like that, that's fine. We have that donate now link. As the donations roll in, we put your name up on the site. We've actually had another organization, donate to us, HVDN, the Hudson Valley Digital. Oh, I'm going to butcher this. I'm thinking that it's Hudson Valley Digital Network.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh yeah, perfect. They're interested in what we were doing. They helped us out a little bit, and they're talking about doing some M17 stuff with their project as well. So that's really, really cool. I'm starting to waffle. So
that's okay. No. Question. So have you guys formed any type of legal entity behind M17, like a nonprofit or anything else like that?
Well, that's part of the reason we have ORI helping us out. It comes down to funds. We don't have the funds to form a legal entity, or even, because things like that require lawyers. And yeah. I'm not a lawyer. I don't even play one on TV. So, we need the proper legal advice from the people that know that sort of thing. So we can bring them in. We need that funding. And, we're applying for grants and, looking to get that taken care of. And then eventually, yes, if things start to, branch out as far as the administrative side of everything, then yeah, well, eventually we may, branch out and do something like that.
All right. And, I guess we can move on to the hardware aspect. We mentioned the TR9 project, which you said was on hold, but, can you tell us a little bit about that?
So the TR9. that was our little project as far as getting basically a build your own handheld, and it was going to feature M17 as the mode available on it. It was being designed as both a analog as well as digital radio, so similar to about any other digital radio that you can get nowadays. But it was going to specifically be developed for use of M17 on it. You can go ahead and download the Gerbers. You can have boards made up. But there are a few limitations that we've run into, or a few bumps that we've run into. The layout of the board, things like the power output. Things that need to be massaged into actually working on that. And because hardware development seems to be a bit more involved than what we're currently focusing on as far as leveraging existing hardware, it's been put on hold, But once we have, you know, everything ironed out as far as the air interface, then we can go ahead and take a look at that hardware, designing our own hardware and that kind of thing. And it's not to say that, you know, nobody else can do that. They're more than welcome to take a look at what we're doing and you know, make changes or you know, suggest a better way of doing things. That, and we're completely open to that. So if anybody wants to, you know, kind of take a look at that and if they have any ideas, we're all ears.
Alrighty. Well, Russ, did you want to talk about the reflector software?
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to touch on it briefly.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I think it's a good spot to do it.
Okay. You might be delayed a bit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think you're delayed considerably, actually, but that's okay. We'll muddle through. Yeah, I didn't want to get too deep into the M17 reflector project, but I just wanted to ask about like how you are handling adoption of the M17 reflectors, because, I mean, I just like decided one day that I wanted to run one, so I downloaded the software, built it, popped on, registered it, blah, 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 and so now I have an M17 reflector. I know you can link them together, so you can have sort of a, you know, a whole network of M17 reflectors linked together. I just want to know, like, what you foresee as far as adoption of M17 reflectors. Do you just want a million people to sign up for reflectors, or is it going to be, you know, limited or restricted or managed in some way or anything like that? I'm specifically talking about the reflector network, not about the software.
Right. And those are very, very good questions. It's you come up a few times, and this is the answer that I give people. We're not going to stop you from creating your own reflector. You can go ahead and do that. That's the whole idea behind you know, MRFD and running an M17 network. We offer, I say we, and it's really just been, you know, me, offer a registration system in order for it to be publicly listed and available to M17 clients, or even, you know, the software built into a radio, you know, if you wanted to directly connect to a reflector from your radio. So I kind of curate the M17 reflectors site. It's not necessarily something that I want to turn into a I'm the boss and this is what you're going to do. It's more of a moderated list rather than, you know, a strict joining kind of thing, you know, and only I list what I feel is a reflector that should be worthy of being listed. No, it's moderated in the fact that we're just basically trying to look out for things that might be off color, or, you know, people trying to just kind of, you know, fill up our database full of junk bogus, you know, registrations. So it's moderated by me, but you know, anybody can start up an M17 network. It doesn't have to be listed. It doesn't have to be registered or anything like that. But we do offer that listing service. I am working on getting the interlinks, kind of a workflow for the interlinks. Cause right now it's just all based on, if you want to interlink with a reflector, you got to email everybody that's on that same interlink. And, you know, it can be a little bit of a overhead as far as, you know, trying to join a group of, reflectors on a specific interlink. So, I'm trying to work out all the kinks as far as that's concerned. So all you have to do is just click on a button on the site and say, I want to interlink with all these other reflectors. And then everybody gets a notification all at the same time and says, hey, this person wants to join. So do you accept? Do you have them in your interlinks file? And then once everybody says yes, it gets lit green. And then that person that runs the reflector just downloads an interlink file from the site to their, to the server, and, off they go. So, I mean, it's, an involved process, as far as, you know, getting everything set up on my side. But, you know, I think we're doing pretty good with it. You know, it's similar to in fashion to, you know, registering a YSF reflector or an XLX reflector. I'm just trying to make it a little bit more user friendly. You know, some of these registration systems, you have to go on a forum and request to be listed on the forum, or you have to go to a site that was that may not be coming up for you, or you know, might be located in a country that's you know, blocked or something like that. So I'm working on that, making sure that everybody in the whole world can access our system without any issue, and make that registration system as easy as possible.
All right, very good. And just in case it wasn't clear earlier, we were talking about this, M17 reflectors are online. There are quite a few of them. Many of them are publicly registered. And if you happen to be running DudeStar or DroidStar, you can select M17 as your protocol, and you can connect to any one of the available reflectors. They show up in the list, and you can talk using M17, like, right now if you want to. Well, after you build the software. But, you know, soon. So it is an actual functioning thing, which is really cool.
Yep, and I just dropped a link. The site for the reflectors list is reflectors.m17.link. So if anybody is interested in seeing what's out there, we have them all listed there.
All right. Very good. And I apologize for stealing 659 inadvertently.
It's just the local exchange for Newmarket, and I just happen to be in Newmarket. A happy coincidence, I suppose.
I suppose. It's been so long since I lived in New England that I had forgotten that 659 was Newmarket's exchange, but, you know, it is what it is. So I think we've gotten most of the way through the project, and we're down sort of to the straggly little bits. So let's go ahead and find out if you're taking any input from the community as far as development. Are you looking for developers? Do you need developers? Are you accepting outside influence or suggestions? And if so, where does one go to participate in that way?
We are 100% open, and you know, like I said earlier, if anybody has any ideas of, you know, after they take a look at our system, after they took a look at our protocol, after they took a look at the hardware, and after they look at the tutorials that we're making, if anybody has any input, please, you know, let us know. There are many ways of getting in touch with us. We have all of them listed on the site up in the chat and contact area there. If you look at the top of the website, we can be found on IRC, on Matrix, on Discord. All three of those are linked together, so you can join on any of them, and you'll be talking to everybody that's interested in the project, not just the team, but everybody else that's involved. And you can also email us, contact@m17.link, or you can just shoot me an email, you know, if you have any questions. I mean, if anybody has any ideas, like I said, we're all ears, and no reasonable suggestions or ideas will go unheard. So we are open to the community at large, and that's what we want to focus on. We want to focus on making sure that you know, it's not just a handful of people that are coming up with something, that we actually get a full set of input from everybody that could be possibly involved, not just developers, but also end users.
All right, that's excellent. And I think I've learned all about the M17 project I need to know for tonight. We're going to have links to all of the stuff you've talked about in the show notes. So is M17.link the core site where everybody needs to go to get the most information, or is there a different place?
Well, the actual public presence and the main site is m17project.org. That has all the links for everything, protocol, tutorials, donate, as well as all of our contact information. It's all right in there. The .link system, or the .link TLV, rather, is just for the networking side of it. So things like the reflector list, our emails, our the reflector that I run, the M17 reflector. You've seen double when you see my reflector, but you know, that's on .link. So that's just a separate domain that takes care of the networking side of it. But as far as the public website, that's m17project.org.
All right, excellent. So unless anybody else has anything they want to ask you, I'm down to my final question, which is the final question we always ask. So anything else, Bill? Anything, Cheryl?
No, I'm good.
Nope. Okay. Well, then the question we always ask at the end of an interview is, what didn't we ask? What did we not touch on that you want to tell us about the project, or anything else you want to tell us, even if it's off topic? We just want to let you sort of have the final say about this and wrap things up and put a nice little bow on it.
Well, I guess really when it comes down to it, M17, sure, you can say, oh, it's just another digital protocol. Why do we need another digital protocol? We have plenty of other digital protocols that are out there. The one major point that I want to really drive home is the fact that our system, our protocol, our codecs, our licensing, it's all open. It's free and available to use and experiment with. You can't do that with the other systems that are out there. There's a lot of bureaucracy that's involved with the networking side of all those other systems. We try to be as agnostic as possible as far as, you know, anybody wanting to spin up a reflector or run our system or anything like that. You know, go ahead and use it. Please do, because, you know, without people actually using our system and just saying, oh, well, that's just another system that's, you know, trying to take place of something else, it's not going to go anywhere. And that's not what we want. We want involvement. We want people to get involved. We want end users. We want people that are technically inclined to help us out with, you know, the hardware, the software, the networking, everything, you know. So, if you look at the site, you know, it was tongue in cheek, you know, we aim to kick DMR and Fusion and D-Star off the air. That's just tongue in cheek. That's just us kind of playing around. We want to be on that same playing field as everybody else and offer a free and open alternative to other systems that are out there. And, really, that's my driving force behind it, is to offer something to the community at large for all the fun that I've had in the community, or as far as amateur radio is concerned, everything that I've done in amateur radio, all the fun that I've had, I want to give something back, and I'm trying to do it as best as possible through M17.
And I'm sure the entire team feels that way. So we want to really thank you, Steve, for coming on here tonight and talking with us, telling us all about the M17 project. I look forward to its advancement going forward, and perhaps we'll have you on again when there are some new developments or some hardware or things that are really important to the project that you want to let us know about. We'd love to have you come back.
Certainly, and thank you for having me. It was a pleasure to be here.
Fantastic. Well, we really appreciate it, and I'm glad you were able to make time for us tonight, and we'll be talking to you soon. Good luck with the project. All right, Bill.
Are you awake?
Okay.
I'm here.
Well, that means we've come down to the end of the actual deep dive, but we do have a couple of announcements, or one announcement and some feedback. And since you were the one who put in the announcement about the Storm Spotter class, and I have no idea what it's about, why didn't you tell us?
Me? I didn't do that one.
Oh, you didn't do that one? Did Cheryl do that one?
No, Cheryl did that one.
Oh, well, then guess what? Cheryl gets to do it then.
So I was skimming around today online, and I actually found that the National Weather Service in St. Louis is offering free virtual spotter classes to prepare for the heart of the sphere weather season. Mother Nature is already mad at us here in Missouri, so I can't wait to see what else she throws at us. But if you'd like to assist your local community by becoming a volunteer storm spotter and reporting severe weather to the National Weather Service, or if you simply want to learn more about severe weather, you can attend one of their virtual sessions. The attendees are taught the basics of thunderstorm development, storm structure, the features to look for and where to find them, what, when, and how to report location or report information to them is also covered. You'll need a desktop or a laptop to view the presentation. They'll also be doing interactive polling, which will use your cell phone if you want to participate in that. There are classes on Tuesday, March 2nd from 7 to 8:15 p.m. Central, Saturday, March 6th from 10 a.m. to 11:15 a.m. Central, Wednesday, March 10th from 7 to 8:15 p.m. Central, and Saturday, March 20th, 2 to 3:15 p.m. Central. Of course, if Mother Nature decides to get upset with us, these courses may be canceled or changed due to active weather. But they'll communicate these changes via their website and social media. So if you want more information about this, of course, there'll be information in the show notes, but you can go to weather.gov/LXX, you know, Sierra, Zebra. Yeah, I am really bad on this.
Lima Sierra X-ray.
There we go. Virtual Spotter 2021. So, I figured I'd throw that into the notes now, since We have two classes coming up, I think, before we do another podcast. Is that right? Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
So
sure, why not?
They had one last, I think it was last night, so, and I was like, well, that's too late, but I definitely think I want to check one of these out, so.
Yeah, I might do the same. That's really cool. Thanks for putting that in there.
You're welcome. Now, all right. The next thing is Bill's, but you
well,
guys are
it's actually mine.
It's Russ's.
So, yeah.
Well, the next thing is mine, but the last thing is Bill's.
The last thing is Bill's, right.
Right, so we did get a comment on Bill's YouTube video, which I answered. And it was, let's see, who was it from? Wiley Trailer. That sounds like a made-up name, maybe? but he asked, is there a Linux equivalent to OmniRig that can be used with this logger? And OmniRig is apparently a Windows-based ham rig control application or library or something. And I put in, most Linux applications have rig control using hamlib, which is a rig backend library compatible with most radios on the market. Other applications have their own control libraries. So yes, the application running on Linux supports hamlib and thus will be able to interact with whatever hardware you have. There you go.
Absolutely.
So hopefully he'll use CQR log and divest himself of whatever he's using with OmniRig and all, you know, whatever else.
Yeah, it's like, it's virtually an equivalent, you know, hamlib is basically the same thing, and FLRig would be like a step up from that if you want to have your rig control to have a little bit of, you know, UI to interact with the rig as well outside of the logging software.
Yeah, cool. So that means we're down to our very, very last announcement, and this announcement is Bill's. So Bill, take it away.
That's right. Like we mentioned on our Weekender a couple episodes ago, for our subscribers and Patreons, there is a item going out for episode 400. We're doing a Raspberry Pi 400 for episode 400 to one of our subscribers or Patreons. And the deadline for becoming a subscriber or Patreon, of course, would be March 12th, because we're possibly going to record episode 400 during the Ham Radio Expo, the QSO Today one. So, yeah, so if you're, if you find this content useful and interesting enough to help support the program, you can be a part of this. Otherwise, thank you for listening.
Very good. And Don, KB2YSI in the chat room, mentioned that OmniRig allows for multiple devices to use a single COM port. So I will say that Rig Control D, which is an overlay, a daemon, a TCP daemon that sits on top of Hamlib, can allow you to do that as well. But I just wanted to modify my answer to include accuracy.
So. Yeah, FLRig will allow you to do the same thing. You can use it with multiple applications at the same time.
Right. So there's multiple ways to do the exact same thing, yes. And it does integrate with CQR log and all that. So there you go. So thanks to everybody who joined us, especially Steve Miller, KC1AWV. That was really great to hear about the M17 project. I'm looking forward to using it more and seeing where it goes from here. And before we get out of here, we will mention the folks who were with us in the chat room tonight. We had quite a few. We had Steve, KC1AWV, of course. We had Doug, 88DEP, of the Dude Star and Droid Star project. We also had Ed, N2XDD, Tony, K4XSS, Don, KC9ZMY, Ted, WA0EIR, and Don, KB2YSI. So, thanks everybody for being here. We really appreciate it. And stay tuned for those people who are supporting the show. You have until, when did we say the cutoff was?
March 12th.
March 12th. March 12th at 11:59 p.m. Central Time. you have to sign up to become a Patreon or a PayPal supporter to be entered in to win that Raspberry Pi 400. So, be looking for that. And we'll be happy to give that away to one of our financial backers. We really appreciate those folks as well. But we also appreciate everybody who just listens to the show and makes all of this worthwhile. So with that, we're going to go ahead and get on out of here. This has been episode number 396 of Linux in the Ham Shack. I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD73.